Today we'll be continuing The Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne. Chapter 8, Part 2. Hester caught hold of Pearl and drew her forcibly into her arms, confronting the old Puritan magistrate with almost a fierce expression. Alone in the world, cast off by it, and with this sole treasure to keep her heart alive, she felt that she possessed indefeasible rights against the world and was ready to defend them to the death. "God gave me the child," cried she. "He gave her in requital of all things else which he had taken from me. She is my happiness. She is my torture, nonetheless. Pearl keeps me here in life. Pearl punishes me, too. See ye not, she is the Scarlet Letter, only capable of being loved and so endowed with a millionfold, the power of retribution for my sin. Ye shall not take her. I will die first."
"My poor woman," said the not unkind old minister. "The child shall be well cared for. Far better than thou canst do it."
"God gave her into my keeping," repeated Hester Prynne, raising her voice almost to a shriek. "I will not give her up." And here, by a sudden impulse, she turned to the young clergyman, Mr. Dimmesdale, at whom, up to this moment, she had seemed hardly so much as once to direct her eyes. "Speak thou for me," cried she. "Thou wast my pastor and hadst charge of my soul, and knowest me better than these men can. I will not lose the child. Speak for me. Thou knowest, for thou hast sympathies which these men lack. Thou knowest what is in my heart, and what are a mother's rights, and how much the stronger they are when that mother has but her child and the Scarlet Letter. Look thou to it. I will not lose the child. Look to it."
At this wild and singular appeal, which indicated that Hester Prynne's situation had provoked her to little less than madness, the young minister at once came forward, pale, and holding his hand over his heart, as was his custom, whenever his peculiarly nervous temperament was thrown into agitation. He looked now more careworn and emaciated than as we described him at the scene of Hester's public ignominy, and whether it were his failing health, or whatever the cause might be, his large, dark eyes had a world of pain in their troubled and melancholy depth.
"There is truth in what she says," began the minister with a voice sweet, tremulous but powerful, insomuch that the hall re-echoed and the hollow armor rang with it. "Truth in what Hester says, and in the feeling which inspires her. God gave her the child, and gave her, too, an instinctive knowledge of its nature and requirements, both seemingly so peculiar, which no other mortal being can possess. And moreover, is there not a quality of awful sacredness in the relation between this mother and this child?"
"Aye, how is that, good Master Dimmesdale?" interrupted the governor. "Make that plain, I pray you."
"It must be even so," resumed the minister. "For if we deem it otherwise, do we not thereby say that the Heavenly Father, the Creator of all flesh, hath lightly recognized a deed of sin and made no account the distinction between unhallowed lust and holy love? This child of its father's guilt and its mother's shame hath come from the hand of God to work in many ways upon her heart, who pleads so earnestly and with such bitterness of spirit the right to keep her. It was meant for a blessing, for the one blessing of her life. It was meant, doubtless, as the mother herself hath told us, for a retribution, too, a torture to be felt at many an unthought of moment, a pang, a sting, an ever-recurring agony in the midst of a troubled joy. Hath she not expressed this thought in the garb of the poor child, so forcibly reminding us of that red symbol which sears her bosom?"
"Well said again," cried good Mr. Wilson. "I fear the woman had no better thought than to make a mountebank of her child."
"Oh, not so, not so," continued Mr. Dimmesdale. "She recognizes, believe me, the solemn miracle which God hath wrought in the existence of that child. And may she feel, too, what methinks is the very truth, that this boon was meant, above all things else, to keep the mother's soul alive and to preserve her from the blacker depths of sin into which Satan might else have sought to plunge her. Therefore, it is good for this poor sinful woman that she hath an infant immortality, a being capable of eternal joy or sorrow confided to her care, to be trained up by her to righteousness, to remind her at every moment of her fall, but yet to teach her, as it were, by the Creator's sacred pledge, that if she bring the child to heaven, the child also will bring its parent thither. Herein is a sinful mother happier than the sinful father. For Hester Prynne's sake, then, and no less for the poor child's sake, let us leave them as Providence hath seen fit to place them.
You speak, my friend, with a strange earnestness, said old Roger Chillingworth, smiling at him.
And there is a weighty import in what my young brother hath spoken, added the Reverend Mr. Wilson. What say you, worshipful Master Bellingham? Hath he not pleaded well for the poor woman?
Indeed hath he, answered the magistrate, and hath adduced such arguments that we will even leave the matter as it now stands, so long at least as there shall be no further scandal in the woman. Care must be had, nevertheless, to put the child to due and stated examination in the catechism, at thy hands or Master Dimmesdale's. Moreover, at a proper season, the tithing men must take heed that she go both to school and to meeting.
The young minister, on ceasing to speak, had withdrawn a few steps from the group, and stood with his face partially concealed in the heavy folds of the window curtain, while the shadow of his figure, with the sunlight cast upon the floor, was tremulous with the vehemence of his appeal. Pearl, that wild and flighty little elf, stole softly towards him, and taking his hand in the grasp of both her own, laid her cheek against it. A caress so tender, and withal so unobtrusive, that her mother, who was looking on, asked herself, "Is that my Pearl?" Yet she knew that there was love in the child's heart, although it mostly revealed itself in passion, and hardly twice in her lifetime had been softened by such gentleness as now. The minister, for save the long-sought regards of woman, nothing is sweeter than these marks of childish preference, accorded spontaneously by a spiritual instinct, and therefore seeming to imply in us something truly worthy to be loved. The minister looked round, laid his hand on the child's head, hesitated an instant, and then kissed her brow. Little Pearl's unwanted mood of sentiment lasted no longer. She laughed and went capering down the hall so airily that old Mr. Wilson raised a question whether even her tiptoes touched the floor.
"The little baggage hath witchcraft in her, I profess," said he to Mr. Dimmesdale. "She needs no old woman's broomstick to fly withal."
"A strange child," remarked old Roger Chillingworth. "It is easy to see the mother's part in her. Would it be beyond a philosopher's research, think ye, gentlemen, to analyze that child's nature, and from its make and mold, to give a shrewd guess at the father?
Nay, it would be sinful, in such a question, to follow the clue of profane philosophy," said Mr. Wilson. "Better to fast and pray upon it. And still better, it may be, to leave the mystery as we find it, unless Providence reveal it of its own accord. Thereby, every good Christian man hath a title to show a father's kindness towards the poor deserted babe."
The affair being so satisfactorily concluded, Hester Prynne, with Pearl, departed from the house. As they descended the steps, it is averred that the lattice of a chamber window was thrown open, and forth into the sunny day was thrust the face of Mistress Hibbins, Governor Bellingham's bitter-tempered sister, and the same who a few years later was executed as a witch.
"Hist, hist," said she,
while her ill-omened physiognomy seemed to cast a shadow over the cheerful newness of the house.
"Wilt thou go with us tonight? There will be a merry company in the forest, and I well-nigh promised the black man that comely Hester Prynne should make one."
"Make my excuse to him, so please you," answered Hester with a triumphant smile. "I must tarry at home and keep watch over my little Pearl. Had they taken her from me, I would willingly have gone with thee into the forest and signed my name in the black man's book, too, and that with mine own blood."
"We shall have thee there anon," said the witch lady, frowning, as she drew back her head.
But here, if we suppose this interview betwixt Mistress Hibbins and Hester Prynne to be authentic and not a parable, was already an illustration of the young minister's argument against sundering the relation of a fallen mother to the offspring of her frailty. Even thus early had the child saved her from Satan's snare. Thank you for joining Bite at a Time Books today, while we read a bite of one of your favorite classics. Again, my name is Bree Carlisle, and I hope you come back tomorrow for the next bite of The Scarlet Letter.